I conducted it, and they said, you know, they had a few notes for me, but they said, yeah, you did good. You know, so we'll call you whenever we decide if we ever want to go to Vegas. And about 3 months later, they called.
I am on the prowl indeed. Welcome to Podcats. This is Cats, John Katsalamidis of the Las Vegas Review Journal. My column is called Cats, fittingly enough. Find it on page 3A every day and online all the time. Our guest this week is a pillar of the Las Vegas entertainment community. As the one-time music director for such musicals as We Will Rock You at Paris Las Vegas, and also Jersey Boys at Palazzo Theater and the Paris. In 2006, he founded the Composer's Showcase of Las Vegas, which continues to perform monthly at Myron's Cabaret Jazz at the Smith Center. He also co-wrote the production Idaho, the comedy musical, and produces the cabaret show The Cocktail Cabaret, which is currently looking for a home. He is the one and only Keith Thompson. Welcome, Keith Thompson, sir. Podcats, here we go.
Excited to be here.
Ooh, are you?
Yeah.
It's palpable.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming on. We've obviously known each other for quite some time.
Quite a few years
now.
Vegas.
Yeah, well, many, many projects, many shows and openings and closings and people coming and going. So you're the constant, though.
I guess so.
When did you move to Las Vegas?
I moved to Las Vegas in 2004.
Okay.
So that was how many years ago? 15 years ago?
15, and that was
16?
And that was connected to the rock musical.
We Will Rock You. Yep.
Now, how does a guy, I know your background leading to that point, how does Keith Thompson end up in We Will Rock You?
That was a good question that a lot of people were asking. I was on the road with Mamma Mia, and we got the call. What they were looking for in We Will Rock You is they wanted rock musicians, but they also wanted people who know how to do a show.
And musical theater background.
Yes, musical theater.
Okay.
And so they hired all these really fantastic, like, rock drummer, rock bass player, rock guitarist who, you know, did all that stuff, who'd never done a theatrical show in their lives. And they didn't really quite understand what that dude was doing up there behind the keyboard, waving his arms around at the camera. But I had all these cast members backstage who were following me, and stage managers looking for cues and things, and they needed somebody to know how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of the combination. And I had done my share of pop and rock shows in my life, and I'm very familiar with Queen music. So
Before the production, you were familiar with Queen.
Yeah, okay. That's my era. I was in the 70s.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's when I was a teenager.
Right, so down to the yellow one piece and
Well, something like that. But it was I only went to the interview because I wanted to meet Queen. I mean, the guys from Queen.
Yeah, Brian May was involved
Brian
in this.
Brian May,
at the
Roger
time.
Taylor. I had absolutely no intention of accepting the job at the time.
So did you meet them?
I did.
You did meet
them. Yeah.
Yeah.
They were running the auditions. They were calling musicians from all over the world.
I remember that now. Brian especially was very involved in that show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he would actually respond an email to stories about it. He would email people.
He's a really lovely person, not what you expect from a rocker at all. He's mm-mm. very sophisticated, very educated, really mild and sweet, but he plays guitar like nobody. And a few times he appeared on stage with us. He mm-hmm. would guest in the show.
Was this at Paris?
Yes,
it was. Where it was?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, like I've done so many shows there now.
How long did We Will Rock You last?
It lasted exactly 1 year.
1 year.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of that run, having done a year in Las Vegas, what were your options?
That was it. I had given up my apartment in New York with the promise that there was something called Broadway West that was happening in Las Vegas.
Let's talk about Broadway West. In those days, people have been around for a minute. Remember, for a while, we called Las Vegas Broadway West. We had your show.
Uh-huh.
And then
Mamma Mia.
Mamma Mia came in.
Uh-huh. And then shortly behind that, there was Hairspray came in immediately after.
Luxor.
I jumped on that one.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, Avenue Q was coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Spamalot, Phantom was coming in right whenever Hairspray was happening.
Yep, that was 06, mm-hmm. and Avenue Q and Spamalot were back-to-back at Encore
uh-huh.
at Wynn Las Vegas.
That's
Encore
right.
Encore Theater.
And those are the kind of shows that were happening. Menopause was here at that time with a live band at the time, doing the mm-hmm. what we call theater, you know.
Still here.
I know, it's still here.
Menopause outlasted all those titles.
And it's quite wonderful, but they don't have a live band anymore. They do tracks.
Right, so, yeah. Great cast, but no band, right? And what else was going on? Did we mention the Producers?
Oh, the Producers.
It came in after you guys.
That was
Paris?
After. So after Hairspray closed, I was like, well, this is great. I'm reliving my New York existence where shows open and close all the time. And the whole idea of coming out to Vegas was these shows were going to be great, and they were going to run for 5-10 years, mm-hmm. and I could retire. And the dream wasn't quite happening. Then Producers happened, and same thing. We ran for 1 year and mm-hmm. then closed. But while Producers was happening, I went and pursued a little show called Jersey Boys that was going on. I saw it on the Tonys, and I said, "Ooh, that looks like something that might work in Las Vegas." So I, you know, burned the phone up trying to find out who I could talk to, and went in and made myself available. Cost me a lot of money to go to New York, and
you had to go back to New York to do this,
to learn it, and because it wasn't happening out here yet.
Right?
They even said we have no plans for Vegas, but if we do, you know, we know that you live there, so we'll keep you in mind.
Uh-huh.
So I went and I learned the show from the musical director there, and they put me on for one show in a matinee on Broadway, and I conducted it, and they said, you know, they had a few notes for me, but they said, yeah, you did good, you know, so we'll call you whenever we decide if we ever want to go to Vegas. And about 3 months later, they called.
I hear this said a lot, and I'd like the listeners to know what it means to learn a show.
Oh, learn a show?
Yeah.
Well, if a show is already running,
like in Jersey Boys, instance.
Right. So the show was already running. So I had to go in, not just learn the score, but I had to learn all the cueing. So it's so dense with cueing. There's like, you know, every other like line, there's something to cue this or that. And that was one of the hardest things because there's so much music in it. It's jam-packed and very little dialogue to string together the songs and the musical cues. A very cinematic show. So it was challenging in that sense because there was so much of it. Not that it was terribly difficult. It's not difficult music. The Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, you know, Sherry and all that stuff.
Yeah, pop rock.
Yeah, and not like hard chord progressions or you know, hard, difficult classical passages or anything like that.
Right.
It was just bare, but you had to know how to stay in a pocket, how to really honor the style of that particular music. So that's what that means to learn it. So to learn everything I had to do without ever actually getting a chance to rehearse it with the band, I was just like, okay, you're on. And so you're like slightly out of your body. I had done it before with other shows. Mm-hmm. Like whenever I took over Mamma Mia, literally somebody had an emergency and they said I was supposed to have had like the week. And it was like 2 days and they said, okay, you have to go on tonight. And I was like, okay.
Boy.
And
show
so
goes.
You literally get the feeling that you've left your body right at first. You're no grounding. Your equilibrium is completely gone and you're floating. And you try to navigate through this and just trust that your body will know what to do and your mind will serve you. And so that's what happens. And then eventually you come down and your feet are back on the ground or you crash and burn.
This episode of Podcats will be right back. We'll get back to the interview in exactly 20 seconds. I'd like to use those 20 seconds to once again say thanks for listening and ask for a quick favor. If you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts and you like what you're hearing, please leave us a rating and review. If you want to support the show, that's the best way to do it. Your reviews go a long way to help Podcats reach new listeners. Now back to the show.
You were with Jersey Boys the entire run.
Yes.
At Palazzo.
Day one, all the way through to the very end, 8.5 years.
How many shows did you?
I don't know. How many shows is that?
Thousands.
We only had a few weeks here and there off, and I think there was like 3 months between when we moved from Palazzo to Paris. They had to take the show down to... No. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was 3 months.
There was a dark period between the two venues.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How did you learn that the show was going to close? And that was a show you were especially close to, the Jersey Boys cast, the material itself. How was that feel when you were finally told after?
I guess, you know, after about year six or seven or so, we kind of knew that someday this is going to close. It will have to. And we've been hearing in the wind that they were thinking about closing the Broadway show, but they didn't want to close it before they closed us. They wanted that to be the last one.
Mm-hmm.
And that, since they've taken the Broadway show, they moved it off Broadway, smaller version of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's day of the big inflated, big production contract version of it. had run its course, and now they've still continued to make money on it and promote it by coming these encapsulated versions of it and send it out. It's the same script, same story, just a smaller, mm-hmm. more intimate version that they can still book and tour in Dubuque and Des Moines. Mm-hmm. And so how did we find out that we were closing? We were called into a production meeting one day. I mean, everybody, the cast, the crew, and everybody, the producers came to town, and they had us in. We kind of, we're having a meeting.
The big meeting.
Uh-huh. It was, and we all kind of knew, but, and it wasn't, I mean, we'd had 8.5 years, so it's not like mm-hmm. we were, and they gave us a good, I think they gave us like a 2-3 month notice, so we had time mm-hmm. to prepare.
Yeah, it was like it was announced in May and ended mm-hmm. in September or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they gave us mm-hmm. the time. I'm like, unlike Hairspray, we got called together on a like a Monday, I think, and they said we're closing on Sunday. That didn't give us any time to prepare.
That was over at the Luxor.
That was panic. Yeah, mm-hmm. that was tears and people freaking out.
I remember that last show. I remember the closing of all these shows, mm-hmm. but I remember especially the closing of Hairspray was very emotional. It was like a shock to
the week before, the cast. We had a meeting where we were told that we had enough investors and enough money to run all the way through the summer, and then things would pick up again in September. And then the next week, they brought us together and they said, they pulled mm-hmm. out, we're closing. Boom. Bam. It was so fast that our heads were spinning, and I was ready to quit show business at that point.
Really, after Hairspray?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Is that where you got to know Myron?
Yes,
Martin?
It is.
He was a co-producer.
Mm-hmm.
I got to know Myron in that period of time, too, in the run-up to Hairspray during the rehearsals.
Yeah.
And he was very passionate about it, and it was mm-hmm. it was tough.
Yeah, at that point there wasn't a Smith Center, and it wasn't like he's the guy who's going to one day be the CEO of the mm-hmm. Smith Center. No, it was just that's Myron Martin,
mm-hmm.
and one of our producers. And then so later on, whenever this thing called the Smith Center was happening, it was like, okay, Myron's involved.
Well, by the time Jersey Boys closed, you'd attained an identity in Las Vegas as the co-founder of an MC always of the Composer Showcase of mm-hmm. Las Vegas. Let's talk about that development.
Okay.
That dates to 2006, and concurrently with everything else you've been doing, you've managed to keep not only Composer Showcase alive, but flourishing. We mm-hmm. just saw it this week. It was amazing. And let's talk about where that is right now.
Yeah, the Composer Showcase was having come to Las Vegas in a place where there wasn't a lot of theater and art compared to where I had come from, which was New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been writing, songs and musicals for quite some time.
You're very prolific.
Well, somewhat.
I mean.
Yeah. And then I got out here, and there just wasn't anything like it. I mean, so a friend of Michael Brennan, who was also at the time was musical director of Mamma Mia, said, hey, there's several of us who are writing and have our pieces, being promoted or being optioned and things like that. Why don't we get together for one night and just do it? And, to like have some, play our songs for each other and just have a little party. So that's what we did. And that's how it all started. And it was such a cool thing just to hear everybody's original material and hear what they were looking for and working on.
Always been that.
Mm-hmm. And so that's what it started. And what it has become is it was worth staying with it and staying behind it and keep making it happen, even though it would be so easy sometimes just to say, that was fun. But, it takes a lot.
Have you ever thought that? Have you ever thought, this is mm-hmm. we're at the 10-year mark or whatever earmark it is, benchmark, I should say, and say, I think we're good. And maybe somebody else should do something different.
Okay, that's a two-part question, because the first answer is when the Liberace Museum closed, and that's where we were doing it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
When it closed, it looked like, we got to find somewhere else. And to find somewhere else, I really, in earnest, researched other venues, and there was always a fee mm-hmm. involved, or there was always, a couple of $1,000 we were going to have to pay for the bar.
Right.
It was really a challenging time to try to find
something. Did you go to casinos with the Composer Showcase idea? Resorts?
Oh, different. No. One of the reasons we didn't is because we have a kind of an arrangement with the Musicians Union. And that is mm-hmm. that we don't pay. It's a showcase. And they, at the time, were particularly adamant about not having musicians work for free. But because what we were doing was promoting original music and using only live music, we weren't using tracks
at all.
Like that, right? Mm-hmm. So the understanding between us was that as long as we weren't in the casino promoting the gaming industry, because if we were doing that, the gaming industry can't afford to pay us.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. that was the thinking. But if you're not going to go there and be bringing people into the casino promoting the gaming industry, performing for free so that the casino can make money, then it was cool. So I stayed away completely from anywhere that had gaming.
Uh-huh.
And that's hard in Vegas because everybody, even like the local bar down the street's got the gaming at
the tabletops. Yeah, uh-huh. I know. It has never been in a place. Did Garfield's have? Did Mm-mm. they have? No?
Okay. No. It was a restaurant out
on They didn't have a bar top amenity. Okay. All right. So it managed to – so then you had community theater options and,
yes.
and you know, those types of venues.
Uh-huh. And little wedding event places, mm-hmm. things like that we could have done, which could have been fine. Mm-hmm. But then the Smith Center happened, and like right before we closed at Liberace's, Paul Beard, who was in town, he had just moved here to be the COO, mm-hmm. he came to a composer showcase, mm-hmm. and he said, oh, this is really, really cool. You know, if the Smith Center were open, we could just move you right in there. But unfortunately, you're going to have to wait a year and a half. Mm. And so that was, I thought, okay, what? I didn't know what the Smith Center was, but I thought, that sounds great. Okay, so we got to stick with it for a year and a half and figure it out. So that's what we did.
Thanks once more to Keith Thompson for joining us on Podcats. Part 2 of my interview with Keith will be available next Monday, so make sure you're subscribed to Podcats wherever you're listening right now. What is happening in the column, you might be asking yourselves? Well, Resorts World Las Vegas is seeking a couple of big-name headliners, Garth Brooks and Carrie Underwood, for its 5,000-seat theater when it opens in 2021. The venue will be shaped like a horseshoe, fittingly enough. The resort's booking partner, we have learned, is AEG. Shania Twain and Mark Davis attended a fancy VIP party at Westgate Las Vegas last week. Twain was not expected to be there, but Davis was. Read all about that frivolity in the column. I got an early look at the entertainment plan for Mayfair Supper Club at the Bellagio. What I learned? Some numbers will run right along with the Bellagio Fountain Show. Mayfair opens on New Year's Eve, and we're excited to see what they have offered there. What else? Services are being organized for the late Elvis impressionist Trent Carlini, who passed away on December 8th after suffering a stroke on November 23rd. There is an effort to celebrate Carlini's life at Westgate in January. Carlini headlined at that property when it was the Las Vegas Hilton, and later LVH. Also, we were in the house when the stage show Wow celebrated its 1,000th performance at the Rio. Expect an offshoot of this production to open at Bally's next spring. For all that and more, read Cats. That closes out another episode of Podcats. Thank you, Frankie Moreno, for our theme song, The Biggest Cat in Town. Keep up with me, or try to, on the Review Journal website, or at Johnny Cats on Twitter, at JohnnyCats1 on Instagram, and tune in next Monday to the next installment of Podcats. And I'm the biggest cat in town.